Match day 5, only 2 games on the World Cup, 2 games in Pool B. We've seen a good game between Korea and Japan. And there was, of course, the clash between 2 contenders for the world title, between Germany and Belgium. We'll talk about it, of course, once again with Kevin De Martinez, Tobias Walter and Pascal Kina. Did you enjoy this day of the World Cup?
Yes. Yeah, I think 2 nice games to watch. Yeah, so started with Korea versus Japan. A really nice game. I found Japan deserved it a little bit more than just...
Oh, it started off very nice. Pascal brought some sushi for lunch.
and I wasn't there.
You weren't there, unfortunately. Come on. Missed out some good sushi.
I had to take sushi for Japan, Korea. It was a must do. But we do it again, eh, Floris?
When they play each other again.
Next World Cup.
Okay. Any thoughts on that game? It started with a strong penalty corner from Nagagoshi. I had a feeling that maybe the line stuff could do a bit more on that one.
No, I think Florent Van der Bell would have had it, of course. But it was a good flick.
Yeah, it's tough on the line.
Yeah.
I mean, you see the ball coming in late, depending on the runners. And everybody who ever stood on the line will probably relate. There's a rocket coming at you, and the only possibility you have is put your stick there or your body to risk a stroke. But it's really tough.
But it's also an experienced guy who's there. It's Nam Young Lee who's there.
Yeah, him. That's a 38-year-old guy.
Yeah, 39, I guess, already.
39.
I think they could also, maybe they're expecting a variation, because Japan normally will throw out a variation, and that happened a lot at the Asia Cup against them. So
okay.
Yeah, and then on the other side, Korea went only for variations almost.
They listened to our podcast because we said if you have so many penalty corners and Vic Wynier always the winner of the battle between the flicker and the first runner, then maybe you should do some variations. And they did it, and they did it quite well, okay, although they didn't score on those variations, but nice variations on the penalty corner.
The keeper did well on those variations. Yeah. So also, especially on a forehand tip, he came down early.
High fives to Yashikawa.
Big high fives.
Okay. The Indian commentary was enthusiastic about the goal scorer from Korea, Jongjung Lee, with that first goal. Nice lob over the goalkeeper. When I saw the replay, I thought maybe the goalkeeper should have stayed up a bit more. But
I think it was out of position before the ball even came there. It was out of position. So by the time the player received the ball and entered the circle 1 meter in, the goalkeeper's standing in no man's land. Mm-hmm. So you can make whatever save you want, but if you're too late, you're too late.
Yeah, he was already on the height of the stroke point. Then it's a bit too far, and there were still 3 defenders around the guy with the ball. Would have been a better option to stay on the line and let the defender handle it, put pressure on the shot. Makes it a bit easier. But yeah, heat of the moment.
Yeah, he made me think about
Gucci
Boca.
Emmanuel
Roy.
For those who don't know, it's back in the Belgium final of 2012 when Gauthier Boucard went coast to coast, and Emmanuel Roy was first out of his 25, then had to run back, have to run forward, and in the end, Boucard did also a nice lob, like Jongjung Lee. So,
sorry, Manu, sorry.
Also, the pass from Zhang, really loved it. It was a nice assist.
Great overview, great pass.
A good diagonal ball. Mm-hmm.
Because until that moment, I had a feeling Japan was really pushing in the rear. They were really searching for that second goal. There was a lack of efficiency in the circle from Japan defensively, but certainly offensive in their offensive circle, because they had some major opportunities to win this game.
Amazing. They should have scored 2-3 goals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to see them playing. They play with a lot of freedom. They go for it. Already the second half against Germany, they did an attacking style of play. So it will be interesting what they can do against Belgium.
Mm-hmm. I really like Kaito Tanaka. He played a good game, and it was nice to watch in the end. Second goal again from Jongjung Lee. And that was enough for the victory. Although, in the end, there were a few penalty corners left for Japan. Did they handle it well?
Yeah, they handled it very well. They had an extra play on the field.
No, we're laughing, but it was actually true, because they took off their goalkeeper. And so
just put 2 field players on it for him.
I haven't seen it during the game. It was you guys who mentioned it, but how is that possible?
They tried their luck.
Okay. did the Japanese players know?
No, I don't know. They saw yesterday the coach of New Zealand take the keeper off, and they thought like, why are we not trying something? You know, it's like, let's play with 12. Is everybody focused here or not? Okay, thank you.
But who's responsible for that? Is that the umpire on the field or is it
the technical table?
The technical table, of course.
For me, it's the responsibility of the Japan team to make that makes a huge mistake. And Korea, no one is sharp enough to realize they were 12. Because how it happens in the championship also sometimes that there's a mistake. And it's always the opposition that realize, hey, they play with 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what are the technical table doing when they're putting the substitutions? Who's on, who's going on, who's going off?
Instagram.
They're doing Instagram.
Instagram live.
And I think there's about 6 or 7 of them on the technical table. So
they're all busy with their Instagram videos.
But watching the hockey tourists. They have their schedule. All of a sudden it changes because you bring in another player, you take off your goalkeeper. And if the other players keep to the schedule of substitution, then you have 12 players on the pitch.
Yeah, maybe there was some confusion because they wanted to make like 3-4 other subs and one didn't recognize and just ran on the field.
But nevertheless, they didn't score with 12. Imagine if they would have scored.
They win the PC and then the five guy, the keeper and the four defenders who want to defend the PC, they should recognize there are way too many people on the top of the circle. Like
everybody's
even
stressed.
Though it's end of the game, you know, there's a certain amount, all the players are on top of the circle, but you should recognize when it's one.
Yeah, but
too many.
You're confused because there's no goalkeeper and everybody's stressed because they want to keep on that lead because it's a major victory for Korea because they have a great option to go to the second round of the tournament. So I think everybody was stressed out. But
yeah, so what would have changed if they would have recognized? Okay, Japan would have gotten a yellow card, but the PC would have still stand.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
If they score,
they didn't have a video referral anymore.
No. Oh yeah.
So then they should have realized it before the PC was awarded. They didn't. And imagine Japan scores a goal. Okay, they get a yellow card, but the goal stands.
Mm-hmm. No, I still think it's a technical table. Tobes, you said the PC defense and the keeper should, but how often do you count the players at the top of the circle? You focused on defending the PC. I think it's a technical table. There's a person on that table solely responsible for the changes.
We can check who it was. The technical officer for today was Sonia Batla from India. Also on the technical table was a Danish guy, Kasper Guldbrandsen, and from Zimbabwe, Sarah Bennett.
Yep.
So, yeah. In Dutch, we have an expression, they have butter on the head. They're to blame.
Yeah, definitely.
Shocking.
Maybe a small fun fact. Apparently, this also happened with Team Argentina in the World Cup 2014 when they played a game with 12 players.
Okay.
I just saw this on a different Instagram page. I don't know against which team it was, but apparently they were also on the field with 12.
And who was no one recognized. Who was the table then?
No, that's Rettigi to blame me because he didn't have any sleep. He was coaching two teams at the moment, so he was so confused. He just put in 12 players.
It's also the responsibility of the players. Or the guy who's doing all the substitutions. So who has the sheet in his hand and telling the players to go on and off.
Or they just blatantly cheated.
if they did it deliberately, then I think it's genius.
It's very well done.
Very sneaky.
Anything else on Korea-Japan?
Yeah, I mean, how they execute the last PC, just playing it off the baseline was a bit poor.
Yeah, that was poor.
With 12 players.
Mm-hmm. And you saw him giving the ball to his captain, Tanaka. Mm-hmm. Instead of playing the ball left, it was completely open. And I think he really said, I have to give it to Tanaka because he's our best player and he mispassed the ball completely.
What does that mean? Korea is now third in the pool behind Belgium and Germany. Yeah, I think tournament's over for Japan, although I really like the way they play. It's a nice team to watch, but I don't see them win on the final day against Belgium. So unfortunately, tournament's over. And I think Korea, thanks to this win, are in the second round.
No, I think the tournament's not over for them. They still have some other games to play.
But do they really count?
No, they can't count, clearly.
No.
12 players on the field?
No.
At the end of the day, they play for world ranking points, and that's important for qualification for Olympics.
And then, of course, we had the clash between Germany and Belgium. Did you guys really enjoy the game? It wasn't as fun as England against India. No. It was more tactic, and the fear to lose was bigger in this game.
Yeah, especially third quarter, you could really see that. On a coaching point of view, I liked it because you see Belgium going a lot to the back three, back five a little bit to bring the Slovo more in the midfield. It annoyed a little bit Germany. I prefer that kind of game than a game like India England where it's just turnover, turnover. It's more exciting to watch, yeah. But it's less controlled. And for me as a coach, of course, I prefer a little bit more control. And I understand the exciting part of watching India against England. But it was a stressful game because, okay, we're a little bit involved because we're from Belgium and from Germany and
South Africa, of course.
Permanent residency in Belgium.
Okay.
It wasn't an exciting game. It was just a tactical game where you could feel that by moments the two teams were scared to lose.
Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't enjoy the way the Germans defended, to be honest. For me, it's not a team who should be defending that low or defending completely zonal.
Because they were better when they had the guts to go. When Belgium was at the back, they had difficulties against Germany.
I would have pressed the Belgium defenders if I was the Germans, or start in that setup but step out a little bit more. But just, I don't understand why they do it. Okay, and it's their plan, great. But it's something I asked Toby, if it's common in Germany to play in low zonal.
No.
No?
Not at all. You play man to man, and also, yeah, maybe it was match plan in case they meet Belgium again further away through the tournament.
But that's the way they did it in Argentina during the Pro League as well. Two times Germany was very low against Belgium. One time they won. Second game, Belgium won.
Yeah, so maybe they were thinking that it will work out again. But, I mean, they also know that Van Doorn is not playing the best centre-back there is in the world. So, have the guts to put pressure on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Belgium was missing Van Doorn and Simon Gugnaar. He had a collision yesterday on training with Tombon. He had a headache and some neck ache, so they didn't field him today. It's a difference as well. They had to find other solutions without those two. And they did quite well, especially in the first quarter and the end of the game as well.
And also Germany did quite well. Score two goals against our friend Van Asch is also not easy. Mm-hmm. They did that. They even had more chances. The first chance of Rühr getting the ball.
Great save by Van Asch.
It's a great save.
Still, I had the feeling that Christopher Rühr should have scored that one.
That's probably what you expect from him.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what Pascal said in the preview of the tournament. He hasn't won a big tournament. And if you want to win a big tournament, I think that's the step you have to take. Start scoring those type of goals. If you're that type of player and you want to leave a legacy behind. He had two big chances and he failed in both.
I had the feeling he wasn't really in the game. He missed two high balls in the beginning of the game without any pressure, just miswrapped it.
Yeah, but like I said, he's probably also busy with that. To become one of the big ones of Germany that brings some victories or a tournament victory. We just watched a podcast of Fürste, Hauke, and striker Fuchs also in that podcast.
Then you named three major players.
Yeah, okay, but I think who could have been one of them if he was a little bit smarter on the field? Mm-hmm. Because what he does is not smart enough, and so that also plays in his head. I'm convinced.
Because especially in that the chance he had in the second half, then he was really starting to doubt because he knew although it wasn't easy against the back line with a backhand, and he tried to chip it into the goal. But then he was, this was my second big chance in this game.
Yeah, but don't forget, like the second chance he had was also a huge chance for Weigand, I think, to block the ball in. Like, this has to be a goal already.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So maybe there's this small moment of surprise that the ball is not in goal, but actually coming to you, and then you have to work with that bouncy ball on the baseline. Mm-hmm. That's not easy.
No.
The first chance is...
But we're talking about world-class players right now. So
yes. First chance he has to score.
Okay.
But it was also very well defended by Van Asch.
Yeah, the first big chance from Belgium was a goal by Cédric Charlier. Typical Charlier, no?
Yeah. We didn't saw it. I'm not sure if we saw it. But Ant said to me that was never a goal because the Kepel took the ball with the foot.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
So there was,
and they were convinced that Germany would go to the referral.
Okay.
But there was a clear foot from Kepel, and here Kepel give it to Charlier.
First goal.
Yeah, then it was against Tottenham. No? He went into a 1v1, lost a bit of ball, then had a tackle back. Then was an open ball. Felix and I trapped it, and then nice pass from Felix and I.
It was a foot of the Kerpel.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what a Nico.
Yeah.
But he had a good game, Nico de Kerpel.
Yeah, until that push in the back.
But he's not a defender.
Marco Miltko, yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, it was the push in the back of Marco Miltko, but go on.
Yeah, it's really, really bad defending. But yeah, he had a great game until that moment. But you see, he's not a real defender. Mm. And then you do those kind of things. And yeah, that means also when you train, when you practice mini games at training, when they do those kind of things, you need to be, as a coach, also a little bit severe with, come on, don't do that. Because if you do that in a World Cup game, it's going to be a PC or stroke or, also when you practice, you should be aware of not doing those kind of actions.
But when was the last time that Nico de Kerpel played as defender for the national team? Back in 2018?
Yeah, I don't
remember.
I think
the last World Cup in Bhubaneswar, I think he started as a player who could play every line.
All around, yeah.
Yeah, but in the end of the tournament, he was an attacker, and then he stayed ever since, so.
No, I said it. He has no international experience as a right defender. He does that sometimes in his club. Mm-hmm. But okay, that's a national level that's completely different than international.
Mm-hmm. He's becoming our new Jethro.
Nico Eustace.
No, we can't say that.
He had a good game, but I think he also lost a bit of concentration. You saw it in one of his high balls he gave, and he started really disciplined, but then he started making some faults left and right. It could be a tournament fault that he makes there. If they finish second in their pool, they come up against Australia late on.
It can happen again. Or maybe not, because you have to learn from your mistakes.
No, it shouldn't definitely happen again.
Nicolas Willem equalized in the first half. What a game he played once
Very
again.
Very nice goal.
For me, for now, he's the best player of the tournament.
Maybe not of the tournament, but he played a good game. He played a very good first half. He played a decent second half. Not the impact he was maybe looking for, but he was carrying that German attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's clear. In comparison with Willem, we didn't have Florent in that position enough, because he had to play in the midfield.
Yeah.
And there were moments when Florent was not playing as a striker that we missed that connection with midfield and striker. So that's a little bit, because I find Florent, when he plays as a striker, he also brings that responsibility that you need for the strikers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's something we saw that at some stage, or most of the time, there was no strikers from Belgium in the circle. And a lot of them came back really deep on the line, which made the field a lot more compact and, mm-hmm. the spaces weren't there to play a nice, expansive game of hockey.
Yeah, even Tombone, he's playing almost as a left defender by moment. So that means you don't have depth. And I think, yeah.
Why is that? Because the strikers don't have enough ball touches during
because
the game?
Because there's no space. When Germany is standing on their own 25, there's no space. And strikers get frustrated and want to touch balls.
Mm-hmm. No, but this is even when the Germans were slightly full pressing on a half or on a running press. Yeah. They had the Belgians had the ball in their 25 and the strikers came back so low. And then the Germans are happy because they don't have anybody in their back. It's comfortable defending. You've got players in front of you.
And then
it's really easy to defend.
Yeah, something we also have seen is the midfield of Germany. They didn't touch as many balls as maybe expected.
Mm-hmm.
They threw a lot of high balls.
Yeah, it was always
strikers were also picking up a lot of balls. Yeah, it's not the classic way Germany plays, control through their midfielders, distributing the balls to the strikers. It was more like yeah, let's throw the ball to someone who is in the space and then let's see what's going to happen. I was missing a bit of a game plan.
A build-up.
A proper build-up.
Yeah.
They're all extremely good hockey players and they're able to do it, but it wasn't the case today.
Mm-hmm. And Belgium, the moments they were doubting, I think it's an interesting moment to discuss for them. It's a good debrief to do. When we're scared, what don't we do anymore on the field? Like for me, the connection with the midfielders between each other and even the Slover continue to play the balls to Wenier and Antoine, that worked really well at the beginning of the game. So we need to continue to do that. So we missed that at that moment. And it's probably because we're a little bit scared, but Yeah, I remember the final against Australia and the Olympics. That was also the case at one stage. We start to doubt, and then you don't play your game plan anymore, and you need to continue to do that.
The same in the final back in 2018. It was a bit the same.
Yeah, they also come in as the defending world champions.
Yeah.
And it's harder to defend your title than really chase one down. So I think there might be a bit of pressure. And it's the first time they've been in this situation. That's something they have to talk about. And I'm sure they will. And looking forward to some big improvements.
Yeah, and they don't have to doubt them because they're really all good players. So they need to just continue to play to impose their game.
Okay, because until the second goal from Germany, the penalty stroke from Tom Krambusch, I had a feeling that Germany kind of deserved to win that game for me. Although they didn't play the typical German style of hockey, for me there were more danger from Germany than there was from Belgium until that moment. Then when Belgium, they had to do something, they went full throttle and chased the equalizer and eventually maybe the winning goal.
Yeah, there was more ball position from Belgium, but not danger. I agree. And also, I said it during the game, they really had 2-3 big chances, Germany. Mm-hmm. And they could have won the game and then coming out of the game with saying we had a good game plan, you know. But because they don't win, if Ruch scores his goal, it's over. Or the second, there was another action.
Yeah.
But it's a draw, and like I often said, you always have what you deserve.
On that second goal from Belgium, Felix and I didn't have that many ball touches, but has 2 assists in this game. How calm he stayed in such an important moment in the game with a clear vista. He knows where Beignet is and he smacked it in. I thought that was really impressive. How calm
he really
stayed.
Well done.
Yeah, it's a great, second one is a great assist.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but who is marking Beignet in the circle? Yeah.
Someone should pick up Beignet.
Yeah, of course. And then in the end, if there was one replay, I had a feeling that there were 3 Germans in the lane of the shot, and they were all, because everybody's moving, of course, and they're all just mistrapping or on the wrong foot to clear the ball. And
it's quarterfinal 2018 all over again.
We need to talk again about the high ball, because clearly in the game between Belgium and Germany, nobody really knows what's going on, in what direction the umpire will call the high ball.
But we had the feeling it was whistled differently than the other games.
Yeah, because now I had the feeling it was every time in a way I know the rule.
Yeah, but in the first half it was a bit different, but we also recognized it while watching in the second half. It went back the way how we are used to play the high ball rule. So they blew already quite early the whistle when someone was running under the ball in the space where someone was standing. So
because the rule says this is rule number 9.10. Players must not approach within 5 meters of an opponent receiving a falling raise until it has been received, controlled, and is on the ground. The ball may be intercepted within 5 meters, but outside the playing distance provided if it's done safely. So, in this tournament, we saw some clear, safe aerial tackles, which is allowed. It was called the other way around. Then there is some extra information on the rule. The initial receiver has a right to the ball. If it's not clear which player is the initial receiver, the player of the team which raised the ball must allow the opponent to receive it. So always to the defense, normally.
When these rules clear. Are so complex. I'm so confused already.
It's not that complex. If you're
But it's more it's a lot of interpretation.
Yeah.
Because in the first sentence, you say falling ball.
So
and that's already something that umpires are not enough busy with or can't see, because it's not always easy to see when the ball is.
No, it's not easy because you have to see
to the
receiving player and the ball at the same time.
And a falling ball means when it has its highest point.
Yeah.
When it starts to fall.
And then if they don't know that, then okay, then it's the guy that is the receiver that has an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult one. It's interpretation.
We need 4 umpires on the field.
Yeah, why not? But I had a chat with Michel van den Heuvel yesterday, and he said, it was quite clear. FIH came to the practice tournament in Spain, where there were 6 countries playing a preparation tournament, and Michel van Heuvel said everybody explained the rule and in what way they would call it during the World Cup. And at the World Cup, everything's changed. It's the other way around. So nobody really knows what's going on. Should there be a second briefing from the umpires for every team? How they will, how do we call every aerial ball?
I think I'm curious if there's a proper umpire briefing. If there was a proper umpire briefing made before the tournament.
Yeah, it was in Cadiz in Spain.
Yeah, they always do. Even in, in the World Cup, they always do that.
My question was from the Olympics in Rio, there's a nice 20-minute video on YouTube you can watch.
Okay.
I would be really curious to have one of this World Cup just to see how they interpreted everything.
Because there was also a high ball in the game between Korea and Japan where the Japanese goalkeeper got into the 5 meters, does it safely with his glove. He smacks the ball away and he got the penalty corner against him. And for me, I was really shouting at that moment towards my TV screen, that's not a penalty corner. And
yeah, for me, this example is also not a penalty corner.
Mm-hmm.
The keeper is standing there and moves his arm towards the ball, plays the ball with his glove and the guy standing behind him. Like, it's not real. There is physical contact afterwards because also the player tries to go towards the ball. But yeah, for me, no PC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to see sometimes who's the receiver, eh?
Yeah.
And I find it a pity that we're still talking about umpires on, in my opinion, quite far into the tournament where I'd like to be talking more about quality hockey.
Yeah, but yeah, it's important because I have the feeling that defenses are scared of a high ball because they don't really know in which way they will have a decision by the umpire.
That's why I just get rid of this rule.
Yeah, let it play. Like we said before. Yeah,
let it play makes it like we're looking always to make hockey more attractive, to keep it an Olympic sport. Just take it away, the rule, and let them play hockey.
Yeah. There was one more topic I'd like to talk about from the Germany-Belgium game. Christopher Ruhr, in the end of the game. What happened, and was it a yellow card, or did he deserve a red card maybe?
Oh, that's a yellow card.
It's a yellow.
I think we all know the history behind the Ruhr and the Germans and Belgians and... But that's a 10 minutes yellow. It's not a red card.
Okay. Yeah, that's how I called me, during the game. I said, if you know the history and you take that with your decision, which is, of course, not allowed, then it's a red card because it's clearly a deliberate foul on your opponent. If you watch the foul, it's a 10-minute yellow.
So, 10 minutes yellow, yeah.
Yeah, because the Belgians, they really went complaining against the umpire. I think it was Nicolas Kerpel. He kept on saying against the New Zealand umpire. It's like, it's deliberate. It's deliberate. It's every time. It's Christopher Ruhr, deliberate fall on a Belgian player every time. So, yeah, there was some history in it. And
But you cannot come back to history in this game. Like, no one cares about history.
No.
And Nicolas tries his luck. He has to do it, eh?
Yeah.
That's what you do. You try to give him a red card because then he doesn't play. Sorry?
He also pushed someone on purpose.
Yeah. And it was a penalty stroke.
Sure. Yeah. It's a deliberate foul. You want to give a red card?
No, it's a yellow card. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. Okay, yellow card.
I mean, it's more interesting what happens afterwards.
The kiss.
The kiss.
The kiss from Christopher Ruhr.
Yeah, that's something you don't do.
Did you say Christopher Ruhr?
Nice one. No. Yeah, it was...
Yeah, shame on him.
Shame on him. For me, as a Belgian, now he's a guy you love to hate right now. But as a sports fan, I really like it. I really like it because then you know, this next game, it's going to be the same again. I really love it. I really love it that it happens. And it makes things more interesting next time around. And maybe in a final, why not?
Yeah, but it's something you don't do. No matter how emotional a game gets, just keep your shit together.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you don't do it. It's disrespectful.
Yeah, I'm curious to know how the German team will react, players and staff, on that.
Apparently, Toby, you told me that Christopher Ruhr and André Henning are basically the best friends.
Yeah, but still, but I'm not...
They're good buddies, So you see how this is going to be handled. I mean, there was also... This probably, I don't know if it's getting discussed within the team or if everybody's just laughing a bit about it.
Yeah, but I know Marco Miltke, he doesn't like those kind of things. I think he might go to him and say, hey, you don't do that. I think, I don't know.
Mm.
I don't know how it works in the national team. Yeah.
This can bite you in the ass big time when if you should meet Belgium again.
Yeah, it can bite them in the ass because now we're not certain which team is going to top this pool. So goal difference is in favor of Belgium. Belgium is on +7. Germany is on +5. If Germany wins against Korea by 2 goals more than Belgium does against Japan, if Belgium would win against Japan, of course, then goal difference is the same. Probably scored goals is the same. Goals against is the same. Then it goes to field goals scored. And that's in for now, it's in favor for Belgium because Belgium has 5 field goals and 2 penalty corners. And Germany has 3 field goals, a penalty corner and a stroke. So that's in favor. If that equals out in the next game, then it goes to shootouts. So I was thinking about yellow cards, but that's in Football World Cup. So that doesn't count at all. I was thinking about that yellow card from Christopher Ruud. No. Let's keep on discussing this. Will we have some shootouts on Friday evening between Belgium and Germany?
It would be amazing.
But
then you have to really see, like, okay, do you want to win it or not? Yeah, or do you don't care?
You both want to win. No. You have an advantage considering the teams you can meet later on in the tournament.
Yeah, but if no one of both wants to win, they just run and play the ball over the sideline.
That's going to be a long shootout. I find it also silly that it goes on field goals. It's discrimination against the drag flickers.
I think the logic into that is that you award teams who are really trying to score field goals.
Why?
Maybe that's not just, but I think that's the logic.
Oh, go on the amount of saves made by the goalkeeper. You really pick anything then.
That would be unfair because in the box stats of the FIH, Alex Stadler is not listed.
Oh. Huh? What?
So they are.
Yeah, I recognized this morning.
Oh, why not?
It's not the FIH mistake that you can...
No, but it's also curious to see how Belgium have to prepare that in one way, because they play before Germany. That means you say to the guys, you take your shower and you dress again for the shootout because we might have shootouts.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the case, eh?
Yeah, but you do it in warm-up shirts.
Yeah, but it's so strange. Because
he's probably rocking up with his Birkenstocks.
But... imagine if it happens. So you already had a cooling down, obviously. Then you have to do a small warm-up because can't do it really cold. The Germans are full of adrenaline after a game. Who's in favor, do you think? The team who has
who has Vanesh.
Okay.
Okay. I like him in United.
No, but yeah.
Yeah, we had the situation in our, that's a long time ago, Junior World Cup 2009. We were also finished, and Australia played afterwards, and everything was the same because we drew against Australia. And after the game, we had to do strokes for the group win. Mm-hmm. And okay, strokes is something different than shootouts because you don't have to warm up. Mm-hmm. Maybe the keeper a bit.
Yeah.
But
did you win that game, Toby?
No.
Sorry.
But we won the World Cup.
Ah, congrats. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay. It's nice.
But yeah, there's still a few ifs.
At the end, it comes down also, if you top the pool, you have a 5-day break. If you become second, you will play again. Mm-hmm. So the question is, do you want to stay in rhythm and play games? Or do you say, okay, we take the 5-day break to really rest all the injuries out?
I think for Belgium, practice, a break.
And then play a game.
I think for Belgium right now, a break is welcome.
Yeah.
With Van Doren with a back problem. Simon Gagnard probably will be okay for the next game, but you never know. John Domen, who still lacks a bit of rhythm. Maybe for him, an extra game would be nice, but yeah. Another cap. But
We were going for the 500.
They're definitely going to play a practice game. That's for sure. They're gonna play a practice game, but
against who?
In the World Cup.
Last time, every team who won their pool had a practice game. I witnessed Argentina against Australia when after that practice game, there was basically a fight.
Yeah,
from the touchline, really.
Oh, wow. You don't do that.
Yeah.
Injuries. Yeah, but it's imagine different. How stupid it is.
They play mini games between each other. Look, Gugnar. He had a knock from
Boone. You can't stay in bed for like 5 days, no?
No, but also in the competition, you do that. Eh? You have also a break of 5-6 days. So I think for Belgium, it's an advantage to have a break.
And then who would they play a practice game? Is that already organized or do they do it after the pool stage?
After the pool stage. And but
then you fly to Rokela again.
But you can play against other teams.
Australia, Netherlands or India if they top their pool. Yeah.
Or one of the teams who's already out.
But they play again.
Yeah,
the teams
play
who
again.
Are out, they play a ranking game. One more ranking game.
Teams have to practice. You have practice time. And you just play a game.
But in your practice
maybe,
game,
maybe not 4 times 15 minutes, but
what's to stop one player just completely smashing another player on the hand, breaking it on purpose? Bye bye, your tournament's done.
No, but you have
sportsmanship. Come on,
sportsmanship. You just said you like this.
Sportsmanship is going on there.
No, yeah. Okay, but especially in hockey, sportsmanship counts for a thing, no?
And they probably don't play PCs.
Yeah, probably.
They don't play PCs. So what now that you, I remember that.
Neither did Germany today.
Nah.
That was a fair play.
Gentlemen's agreement.
Tobias Walter, your umpire of the day. There were only two games, so...
Yeah, so 6 possible umpires to choose. And I choose the video umpire from the game Belgium against Germany, Javed Scheik. He did a great job.
Yeah, twice a quick decision.
Twice a quick decision.
And the correct one.
Perfect. Well done. Okay. Congratulations.
Okay. Javed Scheik. Congrats.
Indian.
Yeah. Indian umpire. Okay. So that wraps it up for match day 2. Thursday, we have the start of the final pool games. Start with Malaysia against New Zealand. Big game. I'm really looking forward to that game because the winner of that game will be second in that pool probably. And that would be nice if Malaysia would do what we expect them to do.
If New Zealand is doing what we expect them to do, then they take out the keeper and Malaysia is going to score twice. So perfect. Can't wait for the game.
Okay. I saw an interview actually yesterday from San Lane, and he said, yeah, we tried something and it was part of the plan and it didn't came around the way we thought it would be.
Stupid plan.
Okay. Then the Netherlands will be playing Chile. Chile is still looking for the first points in the tournament. And then Spain, England, big game in the pool of that pool D. And then India will play Wales. Yeah.
Two nice games. New Zealand, Malaysia, and Spain, England.
Yeah.
Netherlands, Chile?
Nah.
Even India, Wales will be 2 walkovers.
Thank you very much once again, Kevin De Martinez. Tobias Walter, Pascal Kina. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram on TheHockeyPC. And of course, follow also The Hockey Tourist by Tobias Walter.
We're growing.
Okay. And you, of course, thank you for listening once again. We'll be back on Thursday after the pool games in pool, what's it?
D.
D. And we'll be back.